Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hey, this is Chris Chu from New Haven, Connecticut, currently recording from the grounds at Roland Garros. You're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, and thank you to Chris for introducing this episode of the Tennis Podcast, recorded from Roland Garros. Chris, originally from Connecticut, and I presume now back in Connecticut. It would be a very long trip to Roland Garros if he was still there. Connecticut and Roland Garros, Matt, places that we have visited, both of them.
That's true, yes. We went through Connecticut on our trip to see Bruce Springsteen. We've been to a Dunkin' Donuts in Connecticut.
Mm. Yeah.
You know how to live.
I can remember what I ordered from that Dunkin' Donuts so vividly. It was the beigest food anyone has ever eaten. I was all like, no, I can't possibly eat that. And then absolutely wolfed it down and loved it. So, thank you, Chris. Hello, Matt. Hello, David. How are you doing?
All right. Very well now. I spent the entirety of yesterday sitting on the sofa because I wasn't feeling very well. But actually, there's something to be said for that, isn't there? Because Sunday is live sport day. And my word, did I consume all of it.
I was going to say, David's Sunday when he's ill sounds a lot like my Sunday when I'm in tip-top health, just sitting on the sofa watching
sport. I mean, it literally was the same as my Sunday, except I was fine.
Now I realise why you two seem to enjoy it all so much, and I never really allow myself to do that. And now I'm going to have to find ways of convincing myself that that is the way to live, also in full health.
Saturday and Sunday are good times to be ill, I would say. Unless tennis is happening in the middle of the night, UK time, which a lot of it was over the course of this week and this weekend, we've been relying on catch-up function. I mean, some of us have been just staying up and watching in the middle of the night, much to our dog's despair. But we've also been relying on various different catch-up functions. Let's start in Guadalajara, where Maria Sakkari has won her second career title, her first since the one she won in Rabat in 2019, her first and by far the biggest at 1,000 level. She beat Caroline Dollarhide 7-5, 6-3. I'm doing a Carlos Alcaraz thing. Overthinking it. Caroline Dollarhide 7-5, 6-3 in the final. En route to that final, she beat Storm Hunter, Camilla Giorgi, Emiliana Arango and Caroline Garcia, who seemed to be in great form up until the semi-finals and then was rolled by Sakkari in that semi-final. I mean, you only have to look at Maria Sakkari's celebration upon winning match point to know the significance of this title. I know lots of people will point to the depleted field in Guadalajara. Yes, for a 1,000 event, it was a slightly weaker field than you would ordinarily get. But, I mean, for me, the issue with Maria Sakkari has not been, I mean, there have been occasions, sure, where it's been the quality of the opposition. But just as much as it's been that standing in her way to winning titles of this size, it's been herself and her own demons. And she still had to fight those this week in Guadalajara and yesterday in the final and in the semi-final. And she defeated them. And it we'll get on to the what does it mean of it all in a moment. But just in terms of this moment from Maria Sakkari, it feels absolutely huge, especially given her new outlook that she's talked about, which is, she says, has helped her to win this title, which is of just enjoying it, enjoying being one of the best tennis players in the world, because it's freaking great, David.
Yeah, it's a mind shift that she's undergone in order to try to change her outlook. And nobody can ever doubt how much she's wanted to win all these years. And actually, I think that's probably ended up costing her, because she tightens up. She starts spraying the ball all over the place. She loses from winning positions. And it's a tough watch to see how much she suffers out there, because she wants it that much. And she led all that in the Netflix documentary as well. And it's often made me wonder whether she could ever really fulfill potential. Well, what is her potential? I mean, I suppose I don't really know, but I feel like it's higher than what she's got to this point, certainly in big matches and big titles. And for her to have not won a title at all for 4 years and to have so repeatedly lost at semi-final and final stages against, yes, sometimes incredibly good opponents, but she's shown she can beat them all. On a great day for her, she can kind of beat, or at least most of them, if they're anywhere short of the best. Maybe an Aryna Sabalenka at her peak is going to hit her off court, but she's beaten all these top players one time or another. And it was very interesting to watch how, after the first set of this match against Dolahide, she looks to coach Tom Hill, and he's just trying to motion to her to smile, because that's the way they've gone about this. Like, all visually smile, even if you don't feel like smiling, just to make your face break into that and to break through the anxiousness and the anxiety and the angst that she often feels in these situations. And I don't know how far that can take you in life, but I really understand why they're doing that. And given how the misery she was experiencing at the US Open, when she lost to, I think it was Masarova, and it was so upsetting to see how sad she was. And she did an interview with the WTA overnight on their website, and has talked about that. She's taken something from watching Coco Gauff deal with it and try to figure out how to do it. And she's spoken about how much support she feels she's got in the locker room and within the sport generally, because they've seen her suffer. And yes, it was a depleted field. I mean, the names you've read out there, Garcia aside, they're not the elite names. They had so many withdrawals. That should not be held against Maria Sakkari. She got through this and she won it. And she won it well.
Yeah, I couldn't help but be so pleased for her, especially off the back of, as David said, the last time we saw her at the US Open, leaving that press conference in tears, talking about potentially taking a break from the sport. I think her head was really scrambled. She didn't really know what to do at that time. That was sort of the culmination of a really tough summer with so many first round exits at slams. And then, you know, just a few weeks later, a total transformation again. Yes, in tears again, but this time, you know, tears of relief and happiness. And that was just so great to see. And yeah, I couldn't help but notice that Gary Nathan's article dropped in my inbox on Friday, and it was titled "You Got This, Maria," and I thought that was just such an incredibly bold headline to sort of put on semi-final day, knowing Maria Sakkari's record, you know, her sort of conversion rate in semi-finals and finals. I thought, oof, does she have this? Like, I really don't know. This is kind of where we find out. I think we all looked at that weakened field in Guadalajara, but none of us picked Maria Sakkari, because, as you said, the quality of the field doesn't really seem to matter so much. It's so much about her own game and her own ability to close. You know, she does so many things better than pretty much everyone in the world, Maria Sakkari. She's consistently reaching the latter stages of tournaments, but this one thing, this ability to close and this ability to play loose and play free when it matters most, has held her back for so long. And I think we did, you know, of course we'll get into what does it all mean, and I don't think it does change my view massively of Maria Sakkari as a tennis player. It feels a little bit maybe like when Andrei Rublev won Monte Carlo earlier in the year, just a sort of a really nice moment for him, something that he felt like he deserved. And I think this is the same for Maria Sakkari. But there were some signs that she was able to play a little bit looser and freer in those big moments in the final, which was really good to see. And if she can take that forward, then that's her transformed as a player. But I suppose that still remains a big if. But it was great that she was able to do it for this tournament and finally get that big title that her sort of consistency deserves.
There were a couple of moments in the final where she seemed to have the upper hand, and then she would cede the upper hand, and you thought, oh God, she's doing the thing that she does, and my stomach sort of dropped for her. But she seemed to be able to contain those moments, sort of put them in a box and put them to one side and reset in a very Coco Gauff-esque way. I think there is so much, the more I think about it, so much that she can take and is taking clearly from Coco Gauff and what she's done this summer. Just the arcs, you know. Coco Gauff had to hit rock bottom, losing first round of Wimbledon, in order to completely reset and freshen up her mind. Undoubtedly, Maria Sakkari hit a rock bottom at the US Open. I was in the room in that press conference after she lost in the first round. And the last words I heard her say were, maybe I need to take a break. I don't know. And then she crumbled into tears and left the room. Those were the last things I heard from her. And it was pretty devastating, really. But I left the room thinking, yes, please take a break, Maria. Please just step away from the sport. Find some peace and come back fresh. And I was kind of disappointed to see her not doing that and entering these tournaments so quickly. But more for me, because it could end up being the best thing for her. And also in the sort of micro sense within the matches, you know, okay, she doesn't no longer have the weaknesses that she's always had and that we've talked about extensively, the way her technique doesn't lend itself well to tightening. You know, you can see it affecting the way she's able to hit through her shots. But Coco Gauff hasn't got rid of her weaknesses either. She's just bringing her strength to bear more in matches. She's bending matches more to her will rather than letting the opponents do that to her. And you know, Coco Gauff's strength is her physicality, and the same is true of Maria Sakkari. And I just think there's so much, even more than she currently is, that she can take from Coco Gauff,
including giving a shout out to her haters. She said she's very aware of the YouTube channel which publishes all of her semi-final losses. In the same way that Coco Gauff was saying, I know all the usernames on Twitter. She said, I know the YouTube channel.
I didn't know about that YouTube channel.
I'm quite glad I didn't, really. It's so mean-spirited, isn't it? But I mean, I think that does go to show, A, how bad that run was. I mean, you can... You know, we've made jokes about the fact that when she's behind, back at a win. When she's ahead, back at a lose. Because that's a theme that has come up and is legitimate. She's kept on doing that. And it's the same with the semi-final losses. But it is interesting seeing that it gets through to these people. And, I always watch Maria Sakkari and kind of just... I don't want her to suffer as a tennis player. I mean, look, there's loads of great things. That she's earning a fortune. It's a great life in so many ways. But clearly she is so... worked up by what happens out there, and it's some of these players they can leave and they've forgotten about it within an hour or they're on to the next thing. I don't think she is, and so I want her to at least have enough success that she seems sort of enjoys life. I personally think that I don't necessarily suddenly think, oh right, now I expect her to go to the Australian Open and win it, but I do think there's a much better chance of her going in and absolutely performing to whatever her potential is. And I'm not exactly sure still what that is, but I'm absolutely sure that there have been lots of matches she's lost at Grand Slams and other events which haven't been what she's capable of, that she's capable of more, and she's not been able to produce it. I think that maybe there's a way to harness the feeling of Guadalajara. Which, by the way, what an event. What an event. Packed full of people. I think that that's probably one of the reasons she was able to enjoy it so much. It's a party atmosphere. It's wonderful what they put on. Maybe she can harness that elsewhere.
Packed, enthusiastic crowds for a depleted field. For quite a lot of matches that, you know... Matches where the crowd aren't there for the names and the stars.
Caroline Dollarhide.
They're just there to watch women's tennis, and it's brilliant.
It's
brilliant. I know that there's lots more that goes into a great tennis event than the front-facing stuff that we see when we're not there, but it just looks so good to see the crowds that packed and that enthused. It just... felt like a big deal, it was wonderful to see.
Yeah, and just actually, I would rather watch a tournament like that with a big crowd and less star names. That's sport to me. That's just the whole point. And I mean, I mentioned Caroline Dollarhide, and I know that. Yeah, I am damning her with faint praise because she is not somebody who you stick on a poster at this point in her career and people automatically come watch. I mean, she was ranked outside the world's top 100 before this week, but what a great story she's made of this week, having, you know, taken advantage of a depleted field. But she actually won a 3-tiebreak match in the first round against Peyton Stearns. Which, you know, look how she's just completely changed her fortunes around. That's taken her up 69 places in the rankings inside the top 50 when she could have lost in the first round to somebody else who might have gone and done exactly the same thing in Stearns. And then she had another one where she came and she won an 11-9 second set tiebreak against Martina Trevisan when she was down a set to love. Great, great little stories within the overall story.
Trevisan having beaten Ons Jabeur in the previous round, and that was, I mean, great win for Trevisan, but it was a bit of a tough scene for Ons Jabeur, wasn't it? And just on the subject of, you know, maybe taking breaks, I mean, look, I've just said that I shouldn't be listened to with regards to imploring players to take breaks, but I really would not mind if Ons Jabeur decided to take a step back for a few weeks at this stage.
Yeah, it was... the same thing happening that's happened in a lot of her matches since Wimbledon, really, where she was, you know, it wasn't peak on Jabeur by any means, but she put herself in a position to win the match, serving for it, up 5-4 in the second set, 30 love up in that game, so just a couple of points away. And then as that finish line was nearing, she suddenly got really, really tight, and then in the third set really faded physically, and Trevisan took advantage of that. And yeah, just, we said it throughout the US Open, but the vibes are off with Ons Jabeur at the moment, and she's a player who's so much about the good vibes that I think it jars even more with her than it does other players. But you know, she's not taking a break. She's playing this week in China as well.
Yeah, the WTA is back in China. Made its return last week to Guangzhou, the 250 event there. And the title was won by a Chinese player, Wang Zhiyu. Her first WTA title, she beat Magdalenette Love and 2 in the final. En route to that final, she also beat Grit Minnan. Victoria Horunkova. Confirm that pronunciation for me, expert Matt.
Perfect.
Perfect, thank you. Of course, she is formerly Kuzmova. Diana Schneider, who she's one of those players that I'm just, every time a name comes up, I'm going to say she's good. I don't know why she's not happening, but I really think she's good. And Nadia Podoroska. Matt, very helpfully, I think at the US Open, came up with a fail-safe way for us to remember, like with the Bryan brothers, which is Wang Zhiyu and which is Wang Zhiyu, because they only have one letter difference in their name, but one is a lefty and one is a righty. And Matt?
Zhiyu is the lefty, and we know that because her name has four letters, like left, L-E-F-T, X-I-Y-U, and Zhiyu is the right-hander, like right, R-I-G-H-T, five letters, X-I-N-Y-U, five letters. I probably didn't need to spell those out. That was probably totally unnecessary. But yes, that is how I remember now.
Little method has saved me and will continue to save me so many frustrating and disappointing trips to the WTA website over the years. So I appreciate you, Matt. Yeah, I mean, WTA returning to China, title won by young Chinese player.
And first of all, great scenes in that final as well. She played well. I mean, she just knocked Magdalena Net off the court. She really hits a heavy ball. And being a left-hander, I got the feeling that she really used her left-handedness to great effect in the final. And she was in tears on match point. It was very, very similar scenes to Maria Sakkari in that way. You're watching it and you feel what she's feeling, which is great. Still can't help watch events in China and just think, crikey, it's as though the kind of boycott and the stance that the WTA took never happened. And if you need the reminder, Steve Simon and the WTA announced that they weren't going back to China until they were absolutely convinced that Peng Shuai could speak independently and free from coercion and have an investigation into her accusations that she laid out in that social media post. And of course they did go back, and here we are. And I think probably it rankles more, even more, because the reason they really went back is for money. And yet they're not back at Shenzhen, where the WTA finals were supposed to be, so that isn't happening. And they're instead in Cancun, which is going to, I suspect, be a rather different financial proposition. And we have this tournament in Guangzhou at the same time as we have an ATP tournament in China with vastly different prize money levels. So, I don't know. It just feels unsatisfactory all round.
Yeah, five Chengdu ATP 250 this week, which hasn't reached its conclusion. The two men's events happening last week into this week, the start and finish delayed due to Davis Cup, Zhuhai and Chengdu. But Chengdu 250 has more than five times the prize money of Guangzhou 250. And I know that WTA have their path to equal prize money. That's a great thing. And hopefully those targets will be met. And by 2027, we will have equal prize money. But that doesn't make it any more sickening to see in 2023. We will update you on what's going on in Zhuhai and Chengdu shortly. Those tournaments are at the semi-final stage, and all of those semi-finals scheduled to happen at the same time. Well done, tennis. But we'll start in Vancouver with the men's and the Laver Cup, which was won 13-2 by Team World over Team Europe. And it was won in the first match, the doubles match, on the final day, meaning that the remainder of the matches played on the final day were, ironically, exhibition matches. I feel like every year we're like, are we going to go over the same ground? We always go over with Laver Cup, which is having our existential debate about it, which isn't really a debate because I think we all agree. But enter Gael Monfils and Félix Auger-Aliassime, two have the existential debate for us on the court. Honestly, you could not have scripted it any better. It was like Gael Monfils broke the fourth wall. And it all played out in living colour. And David texted the group and said, should we just play out that audio rather than doing our usual segment on the Laver Cup? It was quite extraordinary, actually, waking up to, obviously it was all happening overnight for us, so we were waking up to a lot of Laver Cup content on social media the following morning. And they do a fantastic job of content. And it has to be said, this clip, which went everywhere from the Laver Cup feed, the camera and microphone work was absolutely extraordinary. They captured the whole thing. Honestly, if you asked somebody to write a short story or a mini play to illustrate the existential tension within the Laver Cup, you could not have written, produced, or directed it any better. Bravo, Gael Monfils and Félix Auger-Aliassime.
Yes. Yeah, because I think overall, those that participate in the Laver Cup have got the memo that this is meant to matter and we're all meant to be absolutely dialed in and care about blue or red, and the branding of it remains incredibly good. It's so the blue and the red pop off the TV off that grey court. They say it's black. It looks grey to me. Anyway, I say this every year, but you know, John McEnroe and all these other people, they look so wound up about this event, and they really want to win it, and they really care, and they really go for it. And then out comes Gael Monfils, who's been drafted into Team Europe, which is massively depleted in the absence of, obviously, Rafael Nadal, who can't play at the moment and may not have played anyway, Novak Djokovic, who isn't playing, Carlos Alcaraz, who isn't playing, Daniil Medvedev isn't playing, Alexander Zverev isn't playing. All these players that have played it in the past just aren't there. So what does Team Europe do? I guess you would think that they would go to the next highest ranked player and bring that player in, or somebody else high ranked. But instead they go and they get 142 in the world ranked Gael Monfils to come in, who I calculated has at least 70 players ranked above him who could have been selected for Europe. And look, I understand why they've got him in. He's won big matches in the past, but he's also a fun time. You put him on the order of play, there are a lot of people who want to come and watch him just because it's him, because he's fun. He appeared to believe that that's what he was there for as well. And after, five games, he's playing a rally in which he disagrees with the line call, and he goes and sits in the line judge position for about 30 seconds and kind of hams up the fact that he believes that the ball was out, but no, it's Hawkeye live, so he can't overrule, and the crowd are laughing and Monfils is laughing. Félix Auger-Aliassime isn't laughing. He wants to know why Gael Monfils isn't being given a time violation for taking 30 seconds between points. And it sits down asking the umpire, what are we playing? Is this an exhibition or is this an ATP tournament? Are we playing ATP rules or not? On and on this goes. And eventually, Gael Monfils comes around to his side of the court and starts having a conversation with him, and they're having it out. And then you get the two teams talking independently, and that camera work and that mic work you referenced, Catherine, which was fantastic, the way it started with Monfils saying, listen, I don't need to be here. If I don't want to play a tournament, I don't play a tournament. I could be here with my kid. They said they wanted me to come, and it's a grade. It'll be just free and you can do what you want. And then it flicks over to Auger-Aliassime and saying, what did they tell him when he came here? You know, this is supposed to be serious. This is, you know, absolutely. This is what we've been going on for the last 6 years about. What event is this? Is this serious? Is it an exhibition? Okay, if it's serious, yes, we've had a 14-1. Now we've had a 13-2. That adds to its legitimacy, I suppose. But you don't bring in the world number 142 in the world if you absolutely dead cert need to win no matter what. And you... I've seen this before in tournaments that I've worked within on the Champions Tour and more recently on tiebreak 10s. I used to say to them, if you want people to take it seriously, you need to bring in players based on a ranking, and it needs to be serious. And they say, yeah, but maybe we should bring John McEnroe into play because everybody loves to watch him. You're saying, well, yeah, but John McEnroe's 60. He shouldn't be playing, right? Which do you want to be? Do you want it to be an exhibition? And you can have John McEnroe. In this instance, you can have Gael Monfils. You can get him to bring the ball kid in and play a rally and all the rest of it. Or you want to play it serious and actually have a proper tennis match. And yes, you might have an underarm served. You might have Nick Kyrgios moments, etc. But it's not hamming it up just for fun. And I'm afraid I can't get worked up about the score in these matches. I think the tennis is good. We've had loads of emails saying how much people have enjoyed it who've been in the stadium. That's great. I'm just not bothered who wins. I'm glad it exists as a form of entertainment. It packs the place out. But the event and all the organisers and all the commentators and all the players, they try to convince you that it really matters who wins. Well, it might matter to all of you lot who work for it and are paid by it. But I couldn't give a monkey's, personally.
Any advance on that, Matt?
I'm still thinking about David saying, John McEnroe is 60.
Plus, 60 is about 64 now. Bless him, he still plays incredible tennis, but sorry.
Yeah, I think, look, there's so many things about the Laver Cup. It really does get everyone talking, to its credit. It is sort of an event that, you know, people do have opinions on, and as you said, I'm broadly pleased that the Laver Cup exists. It's given us some good content moments. I think that feels like a good word for actually for what it does produce really, really well over the years. I think it needs star power, and John McEnroe essentially said that on the eve of this tournament. You know, it was noticeable this year how much weaker the field was, and he's worried about that sort of in the long term, in terms of, you know, for those ticket prices, you need to have the best players there, ideally. I also think it could do a little bit of a shake-up in terms of just bringing some new faces in, you know, John McEnroe, Patrick McEnroe, Bjorn Borg, Thomas Enqvist. Like, I sort of feel like the tournament's done them now. And look, I don't mean to be disrespectful to some absolute legends of the sport there, but I just think some newer faces would just sort of freshen it up every year and just make it seem a bit different to the previous edition. I think we spend a lot of time talking about where it fits in the tennis calendar, and I'm very, very aware that most tennis fans probably don't really care about that. Like, I think for a lot of casual tennis fans, there are four events that really, really matter. And those are the Grand Slams, obviously. And then there's sort of everything else. And this is a very appealing everything else because it's, you know, concentrated. The branding is fantastic. You know the schedule well in advance. You know who's going to be there. The format's a bit different. Like, I totally get why it appeals to a lot of people and why they have such a good time going to that event. I'm sure if I was a casual tennis fan, I would love this event and would probably want to go because of the show that it puts on. I totally understand all that. And I get that most people are not thinking about how much it really matters in the grand scheme of the tennis calendar. They just want to see, you know, the names they know and have some fun over a three-day period. I think that's why the event works in its current format. But for us, I'm really starting to think about how it's going to evolve so that we're not having this conversation every year about what does it mean and where it fits in the tennis calendar. And to me, it's always been possible that it goes one of two ways, ultra, ultra serious or clearly an exhibition. And it's always felt to me much easier that it would go, and better probably, that it would go the exhibition route, because tennis already has the team events that matter to people in terms of the Davis Cup and the Billie Jean King Cup. That's, you know, if we're trying to create a Ryder Cup of tennis, like, tennis doesn't really need that because it already has its own team events. You know, the Ryder Cup's so important to golf because it is the team event. The team events that matter in tennis are so clearly the Davis Cup and the Billie Jean King Cup. And, you know, those events have got their own problems that we know about. But the Laver Cup, to me, should exist outside of that. And it should be, you know, yes, a fun exhibition that, sure, it matters to those players on the day, but let's not make it counting in ATP head-to-heads, and let's not pretend on the broadcast that it's anything more than just a very, very fun, good event for 3 days. You know, it doesn't need to have wider significant meaning for it to still be enjoyable, I think. And it's never felt like it's quite got that balance right with the Laver Cup. And maybe this year more than ever, because clearly the teams were weak. And clearly, as Monfils said, he was there because, you know, he's there to sell tickets and put on a show. And we don't need to be told that it's that it's sort of life-changing for these players to have won the Laver Cup and got one over on the opposition. I don't know. It always never quite makes sense when they put it in those terms.
Yeah, stop the whole Laver Cup counting towards ATP head-to-heads thing. Oh. Get rid of that, and like 50% of what winds me up goes away. That winds me up so much. Like, I really want to be positive about the Laver Cup. This is people. There's not a lot of unproblematic money being poured into sport at the moment. You know, most people coming with a big paycheck for your sport, it comes with pretty major strings attached. And I'm glad that the strings attached here are illegitimate ATP head-to-head statistics rather than dismembered journalists. But there's really no need for the illegitimate ATP head-to-head statistics. Like, I'm just repeating myself. This is the annual chat. There's no need to make it something that's not. People can still come and have a wonderful time without being sold a lie. And I'm not saying the players are like the people involved. Like, they clearly love it and do care, but that's not the same about the sport caring about the result. And yeah, I mean, David, we used to work on the Champions Tour. For a decade, I worked on the Masters event at the Royal Albert Hall, the crowning event of the Champions Tour every year in this incredible venue, incredible staging. I loved working on it. I loved promoting that event. I loved playing a part in making the absolute best it could be. I loved seeing how much people loved it, and I was so pleased that that event existed and had a place within the sport. Would I have bought a ticket for that event? No, not in a million years. Would we ever have talked about the result on it on the podcast like it mattered? No, not in a million years. But it was wonderful, and I'm glad it existed, and it wasn't trying to be something that it wasn't. And end of chat.
Mm. Yeah, and actually, the interesting parallel is that John McEnroe used to want that to be massively competitive as well. He did want to beat everybody, and he went out to beat them all, and he was really annoyed that the others weren't doing that. And he used to get wound up by LeConte and Barami if they played tricks against him and stuff like that, because it's supposed to be serious and we could be a Champions Tour like golf. And I think that's where really we have to probably stop the golf comparisons. Golf was able to have a senior tour because it didn't really matter as much the physical state of the players when they were older, whereas in tennis it really does. And McEnroe did an incredible job of keeping himself fit so he could play at a high level. Not a lot of them could, and in golf they can. Ryder Cup, yesterday we saw it in Solheim Cup. I was glued to every minute of that because I really did care about who wins out of US and Europe. The world thing has never worked. Mm. It never will work. You can't get wound up about what happens to Team World. We're all part of Team World, for God's sake. but also the difference being that they're not manufacturing this scoring system to keep it live on the final day, which didn't even work because it was so one-sided as it turned out. But in the golf, you could have these 12 simultaneous matches all going on at the same time, and therefore something happening every minute of the thing. You can't have that in tennis if you want to keep all the focus on one court. The reason Davis Cup works is because it's nation against nation, because everybody's so cares. And Billie Jean King Cup, the big problems they have is when they're not home and away. We've established that. So my biggest feeling of it all is I wish some of the effort and money and affection and emotion that is being put into Laver Cup by John McEnroe, by Roger Federer, by all these people, was just invested into those two competitions and some stake given, if need be, in the organisation or a place on the board or whatever. John McEnroe put heart and soul into Davis Cup as a player. He never missed a tie. He loved it with all his heart and he hated what it became. And so he started speaking out about it and saying it was on life support. The number of times I heard him say that, and I understand that it's because it came because he was hurt. He felt hurt by, he felt people no longer taking notice of it and players no longer playing it if they were eligible. I wish they would put this emotion back into making that what they're putting into Laver Cup, which it will never achieve. And yet the Davis Cup really could do with it and really could become that event, as could the Billie Jean King Cup. So that's where my great frustration comes.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. The strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Just while we're on the subject of Davis Cup, the draw for the final and schedule was done and announced this week. It'll start on Tuesday, the 21st of November, with Canada against Finland. A reminder that it is all knockout matches. at the Davis Cup final. So Canada against Finland. Then it is Czechia against Australia on the Wednesday. Thursday is two quarterfinal ties, Italy against the Netherlands and Serbia against Great Britain. And then the semi-finals will be Canada or Finland against Czechia or Australia, and then Italy or the Netherlands against Serbia or Great Britain. And then obviously the final, I won't just read out all the names again for you. But just obviously what jumped out to us there is Serbia against Great Britain and the possibility maybe of Murray Djokovic one last time. No, Matt's shaking his head. No. No.
I just don't see how that would be possible with the way that that you have to do your team rankings.
Yes, the rule that was introduced as a result of Switzerland-Russia gate.
No, I mean, that rule was in place, which is why Russia did what they did to try and circumvent that rule. I suppose maybe if Britain wanted to try and circumvent that rule.
Yeah, maybe Britain could do something dastardly to circumvent that rule.
But no, I mean, you have to match your number one, you know, you have to play your number one as playing the number one slot. And it's all done by ranking.
You can't imagine how Murray could ever be number one in that team, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. But given the possibilities for Britain, you know, they were either going to face Italy or they were going to face Serbia. I mean, the thing is, with Serbia, obviously, we expect Novak Djokovic to be there, and that feels like a pretty much sort of guaranteed loss, pretty much, in that number one position, barring a sort of miracle from, I don't know, Norrie or Evans or Draper. But actually, the number two singles and the doubles are winnable ties, I think, for Great Britain. So it's maybe not the worst draw in the world, even with, you know, the presence of Novak Djokovic there.
Staying with the men, as I said, we have the ATP in Zhuhai and Chengdu this week. They're at the semi-final stages. In Zhuhai, the semi-finals are Khachanov against Korda and Karatsev against Nishioka. And in Chengdu, it's Zverev, Dimitrov and Safiulin Musetti. Do we have anything to say about those, or should we wait until the next pod when the events are wrapped up?
Yeah.
Blank faces.
I'd prefer to do that, Catherine, I think. I mean, I know that Karatsev beat Murray from a set down the other day, and I just find him an interesting player, because if he's on, if he connects, there's not a lot that an opponent can do about it. But then he has these periods where he doesn't connect and nothing much happens. But I mean, it's quite interesting. I think one of our colleagues, Courtney Walsh, is an Australian journalist who's working for the Zhuhai tournament, and he's been actually reporting and writing, I think, for the website of that event. And I mean, he paints an amazing picture of that place, and they seem to be getting great crowds, which suggests that the actual use of a weekend almost in the middle of the tournament is extending the period of interest, I suppose. But it does feel weird, you know, from the outside to have tournaments finishing on a Tuesday.
Absolutely terrible for podcasters who plan their weeks around tournaments finishing on a Sunday, so we can talk about them on a Monday.
Yeah, disaster. It feels like a direct troll to us, to be honest. But we will wrap up those tournaments for you on the pod next week. Shout out to Liam Brody. He broke into the top 100 this week for the first time. We always have a soft spot for Liam because he's good people. He spoke to us during the pandemic and gave us a really interesting perspective on, well, always gives a really interesting perspective on life as kind of a struggling tennis player outside the world's elite. I was going to say outside the world's top 100, which is what he's always been up until now. And it's a real advert for perseverance, because he loves it. He loves that he gets to play tennis for a living, and he's always got that incredible perspective. But it's also a struggle. It's not a bed of roses being a tennis player at that level. And he loves the sport enough that he's withstood all of that, and for him to be reaching career highs is impressive and very heartening. So congratulations, Liam. We also had the ITF presidential elections this week. David Haggerty re-elected with 72.94% of the votes, 318 votes over Dietlof von Arnim, 118 votes for him. The ITF board were elected, 14 board members, only two of them are women. Yeah, more women, please. More diversity on that board. More women and more general diversity in tennis management and administration positions, please. I think that would be a good thing. This week, the WTA is in Tokyo. It's a 500 event. It's got a good field. Iga Świątek, Jessica Pegula, Daria Kasatkina, Maria Sakkari down to play, and Caroline Garcia not playing there, though, and this is news hot off the press, is Elena Rybakina. She has withdrawn in the last couple of hours, and that withdrawal follows on from an Instagram post that she put up yesterday, I think, or perhaps the day before. She was unhappy about performance buys, which is a new thing introduced by the WTA, whereby instead of the top four seeds automatically receiving first round buys in the tournament, the top two, so in this case Świątek and Pegula, receive those automatic buys, plus in this case Garcia and Sakkari getting the other two buys because of their performance in Guadalajara last week. She put on Instagram, "Thank you for changing the rules last moment. Great decision, as always, WTA." And then two emojis, a clown and a circus. She, in her withdrawal statement, says, "I have to prioritise my health and fitness and need time to get to 100% healthy." Clown and circus emoji. I mean... Nailed it.
Yes. I always enjoy it when Rybakina goes off. She did it last year, didn't she, around scheduling. It always sort of slightly takes me back because she's, you know, that just isn't her personality on court. But I do always enjoy it when she sort of gets off her chest what she's feeling and thinking. My understanding here is that this is yet again another issue of sort of bad communication. Because I scoured the WTA rule book thinking there must be something in there. They surely haven't just completely come up with this idea last moment and sort of dropped it on Elena Rybakina. There's a line in there that, you know, for the 2023 rule books, so this was made at the start of the year, talking about Beijing and Wuhan, and how four buys will be awarded at the Beijing tournament to the semi-finalists of the Wuhan tournament. So obviously Wuhan doesn't exist anymore. So I think maybe they've transferred that to this transition from Guadalajara to Beijing this week. And, you know, so they've laid the precedent there that this is possible to do these performance buys, to give them to people who've performed well at the tournament the week before. But it's very unclear in the rule book that it would be happening this week. It did, apparently, it was on the fact sheet for the tournament that the players maybe get given or not. I honestly don't know how that works. So it does sound like it wasn't sort of a total surprise, but maybe had been poorly communicated and Rybakina hadn't seen it. Of course, this to me all comes back to the idea of, you know, I don't like the idea of buys anyway. My solution would be to get rid of those altogether. Seeding is already a form of protection in the draw and a reward. You know, you're kept away from other top players. And if we are going to have buys, honestly, given the very cluttered calendar, performance buys to me do make some kind of sense in terms of trying to help players who've done well the previous week, you know, to encourage them to play the next tournament rather than just pull out. I do, you know, we see that repeatedly and we always understand it. And if something can be done to maybe help those players, to me, that maybe does make some sense. That maybe would be a good use of a buy rather than just giving it to the top players who are already protected in those draws because of their seeding. So, you know, I quite like the idea, I suppose, that the WTA is trialling this. And let's see how Garcia and Sakkari get on this week with those performance buys. But I can understand some of Rybakina's frustration as well. Seems like maybe she was even, you know, if she wasn't feeling 100%, she was perhaps factoring in the fact that she would have a bye and maybe that would help her get ready for the tournament. She's obviously now withdrawn. I do have some sympathy because I guess she hasn't been told clearly enough. Bit of a mess, but I did quite enjoy Rybakina's Instagram post.
Yeah, same. What Matt said, very good. There is also a WTA event in Ningbo this week, a 250 event. Ons Jabeur and Petra Kvitova headlining there. The ATP, after they're finished in Zhuhai and Chengdu, move on to Astana and Beijing. Astana is a 250, Beijing is a 500. Both of those start midweek and end mid the following week. So yet more catastrophe for podcasters. Great. Thank you very much for that. We have a winner in our AO Travel prize draw. You remember we've been promoting the competition that we were running in partnership with AO Travel, who operate the travel program for the Australian Open at the start of 2024 and every year. To celebrate the launch of the AO Travel Lounge, they put together that incredible prize for one lucky tennis podcast listener and a guest. And we can announce the winner of that prize. It is Vittorio Bassi. Vittorio is originally from Florence in Italy, but now lives and works in LA with his wife, Monica, and son, Eduardo. They're actually expecting their second baby in just a few days. So depending on when you're listening to this, Vittorio, congratulations. Vittorio says, "My first reaction to opening the email was a mix of disbelief and joy. My only experience at a Grand Slam was one day at Wimbledon several years ago. I have never been to the Australian Open or Australia, so I very much look forward to going. My favourite tennis player from the past, although I still hope he can come back, is Juan Martín Del Potro. My favourite current player is Jannik Sinner. Go Jannik. Will Vittorio go to the Australian Open dressed as a carrot is my question." He continues, "I most of all look forward to seeing the tennis in Melbourne and, of course, to exploring the city as well. I hope I can bring my mum with me to Melbourne, also an avid tennis fan." Lovely stuff, Vittorio. Congratulations. We hope you have a wonderful time. We know lots of you will have entered that prize draw and will be disappointed not to win. My dad included, saw him yesterday, most disgruntled. But we do hope to arrange further prize draws in the future. And don't forget that we still have a $500 Australian dollar discount available for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. That is running until the end of October. If you would like to arrange an AO Travel Premium Lounge package to visit the Australian Open in style, the links to check out what they have to offer and how to become a friend to access that discount are, of course, in our show notes. One last bit of promo for you, and that is that the Wimbledon History Conference is taking place on Friday, the 3rd of November at Wimbledon, and they have a very special guest speaker. Let me just look up his name. Hang on a second. Where is he? It's Matt Roberts, yay, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, please come, people.
What a ledge.
Yes, Matt will be speaking about Tennis Relived. Thank you to Robert for inviting Matt and for thinking of us and Tennis Relived. We're honoured, and Matt will be excellent. So if you want to go, tickets are on sale now, and the link is in our show notes to buy those. It's going to be like the Eras Tour of tennis history.
And
unmissable.
You get entry, I think, Matt, as well, you get to have a look at the tennis library at Wimbledon and the museum, and you get to visit Centre Court, don't you?
That is all true, yes.
As I said, the Eras Tour of tennis history. The link is in our show notes. We have some great dog and some great cat as our mascots for this week. They are Flash and Pashmak, owned by Benjamin. Benjamin says, I got Flash shortly after relocating to Dubai for work. I was working a lot and felt my life was a bit bleak. All work and no play. So there I was late one night, a little tipsy on port, texting a pet store owner. That's how things are done over here. And to my surprise, I've been sent a video of the cutest male multi-poo. As soon as I saw him, I thought to myself, that's Flash! Surprising myself, as I never planned that name or anything. He had a white lightning strike on his forehand that reminded the forehead that reminded me of Flash Gordon. So here we are, a year or so later, and he's the sweetest, sassiest, loving, friendly dog I could ever have hoped for. And he then continues, I then adopted his fur brother, Pashmak, so they can keep each other company while at home while I'm working. Pashmak is a rescue cat whose rescue mum is Iranian, and Pashmak is an Iranian sweet. And he got that name because he's a sweet boy. And honestly, avid listeners will know, animals being friends is my very favourite thing. And this has really warmed my heart. They're sharing a bed, they're looking up to camera, and they are both absolutely lovely. And that picture will be in our newsletter. We have our mascots. David's got Maisie, I've got Xenia, and Matt's got Darwin. We did not see Caroline Dollarhide coming this week.
I lost my prediction within about an hour and a half of making it. And yeah, I also had a backup who was Rinky Hijikata, and he promptly lost in 2 hours of me making that.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers Jamie, Hannah, Andrew, and we have shout-outs.
We have Caesar Sangalang in California.
Do we?
All right, Caesar.
Now, maybe it's
hello,
Fessar, but I'm going with Caesar.
Amazing.
God, I love that. That's a big name to live up to, isn't it? An emperor name.
I reckon Caesar can pull it off.
Yeah. Well, you've got to. You've got no choice.
Well, by being a shout-out on the tennis podcast is not a bad way to start. So, you know, thanks very much, Caesar.
I love that we have a Caesar. Thank you, Caesar.
We've also got Sarah Bradley, who is in Wolverhampton-ish. Sorry, David.
Okay, Sarah. You know, Wolverhampton-ish is near to West Bromwich, which is where my team's from. So, you know, maybe we can just say you're from West Bromwich and call it quits there.
Sarah Borwell?
Yes.
Wow.
He's a tennis player.
Are we talking Sarah with an H or without an H?
With an H.
With an H, okay.
There aren't as many Sarah tennis players' names that as
there's
I
quite
would
a lot
expect.
Of Sons H Sarahs, aren't there? Sara Saribes Tormo,
yes.
Sara Rani. But no. I've done Sarah Borwell, though, so we've done Sarah Proud.
You have.
Thank you, Sarah.
And finally, we've got Robert Batista.
All right, Robert.
Hello.
Who is...
Noah Good.
Well, I don't believe this is Roberto Bautista Agu, but Robert Batista, very similar, and he is in Melbourne, Florida.
Whoa. Okay, my head's going all over
yeah,
the place.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. I mean, this sounds like a fake name, doesn't it? This is someone's burner account. Wow. Okay. Hello, Robert. Like Robert McNichol, the Wimbledon librarian. Well, the now promoted Wimbledon librarian, but in our hearts will always be the Wimbledon librarian.
Yeah.
And like Roberto Bautista Agu.
Yeah.
And Melbourne, like Melbourne, the home of the Australian Open.
Except
the next
in Florida.
Grand Slam. Except in Florida, the home of the Miami Open.
Indeed.
There you go, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you ever so much. Thank you to all of our friends of the Tennis Podcast. As always, if you would like to become a friend, the link to do that is in our show notes. We'll be back in a week's time to wrap up the tournaments that have finished and the ones that haven't quite finished, annoyingly, and hopefully to brag about our win at the British Podcast Awards, which we'll all be attending on Thursday.
Exciting.
We are nominated, folks, finally. Yeah, we were nominated in the best sports category and we won't win, but we're very excited to be going.
We might.
We are very much the David in that David and Goliath situation. So wish us luck and we'll speak to you in a week and let you know how we get on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.